You've got the Peter B. Collins Show, up and down the left coast. I'm off on vacation, and pleased to welcome your able blogger and all-around radio guy, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com.
We've secretly replaced the White House press corps with actual reporters.
Yes, we have.
Son, you gotta work late.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime.
Oh, yes, there is. Your cure for the summertime blues. The Peter B. Collins Show. One more hour of our broadcast today, live from Houston, Texas. We're glad you can be with us. We've got, Tova Andrea Wang coming up very shortly here in our Election Integrity Hour. She will be speaking live for the first time in her first broadcast interview since being released from her non-disclosure agreement, is the nice way to put it. A gag order is more accurate, I think. She's the one who wrote the voter fraud report for, along with Job Serebrov, hope I'm getting the pronouncing that right, found, guess what? There was no massive epidemic of voter fraud so much as the Republicans would have liked you to believe it. She was commissioned by the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission. She diligently went about her report and submitted it. They didn't like it. They buried it. And then they altered it. And finally, they kept her for speaking for months now. It's been almost a year. She's finally been given permission to speak. She's going to speak to us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. After we go quickly here to John Gideon, our friend at VotersUnite.org, to catch us up on the very latest. It'll be a quick segment, I think, because we want to get to Tova. But big report coming out tomorrow from Deborah Bowen in Sacramento, her top-to-bottom review of the voting systems, a landmark review. John Gideon, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What's leading the voting news today, my friend?
Well, before we get into California, I just want to quickly say that a report has just been released by someone, an activist in New York State, we just put it up on VotersUnite.org. I encourage people to go take a look at it. It concerns the reliability of the of voting machine vendors. It's called More Evidence of Vendor Unfitness by Andy Novick.
This is in New York State?
Pardon me?
In New York State?
Yes, in
okay.
New York State. But this is this report, it's 60 pages long, and it tells it all about the main vendors, Sequoia, ES&S, Diebold, and then also Liberty Voting Systems, which is also trying to sell in New York State. And it's specific to New York State, but the information is good nationally. I mean, it's going to open some eyes and make some differences. So
well, no doubt, because what we find out in all of these reports, I mean, very rarely are these machines just used in a single state or a single county. They're used all over the place,
right.
Which is one of the reasons, note my segue, John Gideon, that this study here in California is so important that's coming out tomorrow,
yes.
Because it's going to affect the entire nation, and I suspect this is a landmark first time that these machines have actually been independently studied to see if they can be hacked, to look at the source code directly firsthand. And before I get your thoughts on what the clerks are, the election county clerks around California have to say about this, let me just let folks know the reports are Secretary of State tells the Brad blog that they will be released in full tomorrow. These will include all of the team's findings in the four areas of the voting system review, but there will be no opinions about what the state or county should do. Then next Monday, this is July 30, so this is coming right up, a public hearing will be held in Sacramento at 10 a.m. It will begin with two principal investigators presenting an overview of the findings, followed by the vendor's response. I guess they get a response. And then a general public comment period. So we would really love to see folks show up in Sacramento and speak out on the findings, because we know that the vendors and the county clerks are already set to attack Secretary of State Deborah Bowen for doing what she was elected to do, which was look into these machines. And then finally, on August 3rd, Bowen will give us her decisions concerning system certification and what will actually happen from here on out. And by the way, we've invited Secretary Bowen to appear with us tomorrow after the findings are released. We haven't heard whether she can make it or not, but we're hoping so. Okay, John Gideon. Concerning this review, the clerks have come out against it. The California Elections, or what do we call it, Association of Clerks and Elections Officials.
Yes.
We know they're against this report. They've been making noise about it, and they've said that they might not have to follow, if she does decertify these systems, they may not have to follow the Bowen's certification or decertification. They can do whatever they want. Do they have a legal leg to stand on, John Gideon?
Well, not from people that I've talked to. Any legal leg is really tenuous at best, and they're going to possibly try to claim that the timeliness of this and any hearings or lack of hearings violated the law, and therefore it shouldn't matter anymore, and they should be able to just go ahead and use whatever they want to use. Now, of course, the reason that everything is working out with the schedule that you said was so that it gets into the proper schedule and meets all the proper deadlines and everything else per the law. So I think that the Deborah Bowen and the teams that did the research have really done a great job, and they've got it down right down to where they need to get it.
Well, at least as far as the timing goes, we don't know what they're going to end up finding, but for the timing, it's they've got to have a public comment period and then 6 months before any election, and now the California primaries have been moved up till February, so the clerks can't complain about timing, can they?
They're going to try to complain about something, so...
But none of the attorneys you talked to have been able to figure out what the hell they're talking about.
Well, no, they like I said, they seem to think that probably the only thing they can talk about is timing and possibly something about hearings. But as far as anything else in the law, I haven't been able to find anything. And when I did find something I thought was a possibility, I was told that nope, that ain't going to work. So I think that counties are maybe, unless they found something somewhere, they're very possibly going to end up having to go along to get along.
Pulling or they'll pull a Dick Cheney, George Bush, and say we don't have to do what the Secretary of State tells us.
That's
to.
Right.
We'll do whatever we want. Very good. Anything else of note here in today's Daily Voting News for the moment?
Just want to make sure everybody knows that yesterday's interview with Greg Luke.
Yes.
From
Voice of the Voters?
That's right.
Will be available tomorrow, correct?
Yep, at www.voiceofthevoters.org.
He was speaking with our friend Marianne Gould out in Philadelphia about the concerns about the Feinstein bill in the Senate, and I'm
right.
sure he had some...
Excellent interview.
Very good. Voiceofthevoters.org. Check that out tomorrow, as if you're not going to be busy enough. It's going to be a big day tomorrow, John. I hope you're ready.
I know. I'll get some sleep tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, you go sit out by the pool.
Oh, that's what I do.
All right.
Thank you, John Gideon from votersunite.org. If you check out bradblog.com right after we go off the air today, Thursday, you will find the latest voting news headlines from around the country in John's Daily Voting News Report. Okay, when we come back here, Tova, Andrea Wang, boy, I got a lot to ask her about. And these cretins, frankly, who are trying to game our electoral system. Boy, if you haven't seen this truthout.org report, these guys who want to spread democracy around the world, they're lying. They don't want to spread it anywhere, and they certainly want to kill it back here at home, in the homeland. We'll use their words. Tova Andrea Wang right here in her first live broadcast interview since becoming ungagged on the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm Brad Friedman. We're back in a moment.
Wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a good affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a vibe of ganoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery in PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the Secret Garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955 or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
All right, folks, let's take a look at traffic and give you the very latest information. Well, since we last spoke, we're going to update you with a problem. It's located, let's see, CHP telling us about this situation. It's in King City, northbound 101, just before Canal Street. It's an accident being worked right now. It's actually a bicycle in the middle lane. The first report is an accident, but they're just saying it's just a debris now. Just somebody left their bike there. Santa Cruz, northbound 1 at Morrissey Boulevard. It is a crash there. It's on the right shoulder. Two vehicles involved in this accident. And if you're traveling in the Hollister area on Highway 25 at 156, we have a two-car crash. It is on the shoulder. Traffic slowing down to check out the activity. CHP is on scene there. The support brought to you by PG&E. Look for the blue and gold PG&E stickers when buying your compact fluorescent light bulbs. You'll save on the price and you'll be helping the environment.
Yeah.
That's a message from the United States Elections Assistance Commission. To Tova, Andrea Wang, our next guest here, speaking out, I believe, for the first time, certainly, on live broadcast radio, since she has been ungagged by the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, for whom she was commissioned to write a report on voter fraud, a report that, well, the Republicans amongst that Elections Assistance Commission apparently didn't care for. Tova Andrea Wang is a democracy fellow at the Century Foundation and a nationally known expert on election reform, executive director of the Century Foundation's post-2004 election reform working group, author of several election reform reports, and her commentary on this subject has appeared in the New York Times, Washington Post, National Journal, Associated Press, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Minneapolis Star Tribune, and all campaigns and elections and all manner of other places. She has been gagged and not allowed to speak about the way the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission took her report on voter ID. When they didn't like the findings, they buried it. Then, when people complained about it, they altered it and finally released it, but without letting her know it was being altered. Changed all kinds of things to say exactly what Tova Wang didn't believe in the first place, and then they gagged her for non-disclosure reasons. She was not allowed to speak. It took months before she was finally given the dispensation to do so. She joins us tonight for the first time to speak about exactly what this EAC bunch did. Tova Wang, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thanks so much. And just to clarify, the report that we did, and I did it with a co-author who was a very specifically chosen Republican,
mm-hmm.
and was actually a report on voter fraud and voter intimidation. And the voter ID report actually was a whole separate report that they sat on.
Oh, did I say voter ID? Okay.
We'll talk about that tomorrow night.
You're right, and we will. And you're absolutely right. And the two things do sort of go together. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute. But the voter fraud and intimidation report. And your co-author there on this report was Job Sebarov. Am I saying his name right?
Sebarov.
Right.
I
always get it wrong. And he is a Republican, correct?
He is, and in fact was very active in the Republican Party and part of the Republican ballot security teams in Arkansas. So, you know, clearly he and I didn't always see completely eye to eye on everything, but we actually were able to work very well together as time went on and jointly came out with this draft report for the commission, which apparently they didn't take a liking to.
I can't imagine why. Well, what were the findings here in general that, what did you find, and then we'll find what they didn't like about it?
Yeah, I mean, just to make it a real short summary, because it was a very detailed report and went on for pages and pages. I mean, we found, after interviewing dozens of experts in the field and election administrators and academics, going through just years and years of articles off of Nexus and then doing and follow-up articles and reading all of the existing literature on this topic and going over cases, we found that the incidence of fraud at the polling place in terms of voter impersonation was very rare and that the allegations of it were pretty overstated. In fact, of the two dozen interviews that we did do with experts and elections officials across the ideological spectrum, only one person argued to us that voter fraud at the polls was the major problem we confronted in our voting process and was sort of this epidemic.
Only one person of all of the experts and everything you went to, only a single person was willing to make that claim to you?
Yes, and you, Brad, in particular, will love who it was. It was Jason Swarczynski from the American Center for Voting Rights. In addition, we said the voter intimidation was still a major problem, including things like challengers at the polls, which, you know, I think you've been talking a little bit about,
mm-hmm.
Direct intimidation, especially, say, in Native American communities, we discovered this sort of thing. We found that there were a number of structural problems, of course, that led to fraud and intimidation. And we also found that people were not too happy with the Department of Justice and how they were handling the issues of voter fraud and voter intimidation, and that we might do well to take a look at how the Department of Justice is handling these cases and whether the laws need to be changed or the Department of Justice, we examine their priorities and so on.
like the Department of Justice is going to even listen to that. I mean, they have been making prosecution of voter fraud that's what this whole U.S. attorney purge was about. They don't care about what the facts really are. They're pushing voter fraud come hell or high water, and it seems like they wanted a report from the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission that would essentially give them the political wherewithal or the more political propaganda to put out there to say that voter fraud is a massive epidemic. We got to do something about it. Is that the sense that you got? Were you ever given any marching orders along those lines from the EAC?
No. In fact, the interesting thing to me about all of this in a lot of ways is that during the entire process during which we were working on this report, we worked very closely with the staff of the Election Assistance Commission, and the commissioners of the commission also were constantly informed about exactly what we were doing, the kinds of findings we were coming out with, the research we were doing, and nobody had any problem with it, actually, that was expressed to us, except on a few details that we worked out.
Right.
But in general, no one objected to it. No one said we were doing stuff that we certainly weren't supposed to be doing or be going beyond the scope of our contract, which they're claiming now. And then we submitted our report in July of 2006, and we're literally actively barred from the EAC staff from ever having anything to do with it again. Refused to let us see what they were doing to it. They refused to let us work with them on any concerns that they had or revisions they wanted to make. We were completely shut out.
After you had put in your draft report, right?
Exactly. And then without really even telling me, in December of 2006, conveniently after the election, they came out with their report, which they were entitled to do legally. They could do whatever they wanted. They owned the research, and I signed a contract to that effect. But what they came out with, and they used our names, was really not at all resembling what we had given to them in July. So that was quite troubling.
And yet your name stayed on the report as the authors at that point?
The cover page of the report does not say our names, but it says in the first page or two of the report that this is all based on the work done by myself and Job. So I was very troubled, but as you referred to, I wasn't allowed, because of my contract, to say anything about it to anybody.
Well, you can talk about it now, and we're going to take a quick break here and come back with much more from Tova Andrea Wang on this incredible voter fraud report and the EAC's burying of it and the gag order that she received. Not allowed to talk about it. Much more ahead in your calls here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Stay with us.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Everyone wants to know a great hairstylist, and I want to share mine with you. Dallas and Ashley at Malibu by the Sea, 2024 Del Monte Avenue in Monterey. Malibu by the Sea is a full-service salon and bronzing spa. You can slip in for a tan and then have them create a stunning look for you. They perform cuts, color, multidimensional highlights, and the highest quality of human hair extensions. Dallas and Ashley, simply the best, making you look your best. Call them at 383-0807. That's 383-0807.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, Choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
I found a Sunday school program for my children, one that has helped them develop their own system of beliefs and has taught them ethics and justice.
My partner and I were brought up in different faiths. The Unitarian Universalists welcome us both and honor our roots.
With so much division in our country, I found a congregation where people with different beliefs could gather as one. Unitarian Universalists seek wisdom from all the world's religions.
We were so caught up in our careers. We needed a faith community to bring us back in touch with the important things in life. We joined the Unitarian Universalists.
Unitarian Universalists believe in respect, freedom, and justice for all people. Come visit our church in the Monterey Peninsula at 490 Aguajito Road at the top of Carmel Hill. Visit our website at uucmp.org or call 624-7404.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and Peter B. on vacation. Hosting today from Houston, the citizen journalist who presides over bradblog.com. Here's Brad Friedman.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, doing double duty this week, sitting in for Peter B. as his guest host. Happy to be here. We're speaking with Tova Andrea Wang in her first live broadcast interview since being released from her non-disclosure contract after the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, the EAC, gamed her report, buried it, then altered it, gamed it, and then kept her from speaking about it. And Tova, earlier I actually confused it with the voter ID report, and I think it's we need to make people understand why this is important and why the folks, these various GOP operatives out there. You mentioned the American Center for Voting Rights, one of the top snake oil salesmen when it comes to selling this notion of an epidemic of voter fraud. The reason they're doing it is so that they can then encourage the idea of voter ID, more restrictive voter ID, photo ID laws at the polling place. Is that a correct assessment?
Yeah, I mean, that's how my sense of it is. You know, apart from even just doing the EAC report, having worked on this continuously and vigorously since the 2000 election on this issue.
Sure.
That is my sense that, everywhere you go, where these very restrictive voter ID laws are passed, it's completely along partisan lines, almost, exactly on partisan lines,
mm-hmm.
very racially divided. And I don't think it's an accident. I think that, unfortunately, the Republican Party knows that the people who are less likely to have the kind of voter ID that they're demanding in order to be able to exercise the right to vote, the people who are less likely to have it are people who are thought of at least as tending Democratic, minorities, poor people, people who move around a lot, students, older people. And
people who tend to vote any particular way?
I'm saying they tend to vote Democratic.
Yep.
yeah, so it's just it's a little hard to believe that that's not at least part of the motive, although there may be some of them believe that this polling place voter fraud really is this sort of stealth, under-the-radar huge problem, but, you know, it's just there's zero evidence that that's the case.
Well, you know, you raise a good question. Are these real believers? You mentioned, of all the experts you talked to, only Jason Torchinsky of the reprehensible phony GOP front group, American Center for Voting Rights. Only he was willing to come out and say, oh, no, voter fraud is much, much worse. Does he believe it? Do the people that you talk to that actually buy into it, do they believe it, or do they know what they're doing is running a scam here, Tova?
You know, I really hate to ascribe motives. I mean, you know, I just sort of let people's actions speak for themselves. I will note one other interesting aspect of that, though, is that Thor Hearn, the head of the American Center for Voting Rights, was on our bipartisan working group, the AAC, in order to make doubly, triply sure that this was not tainted by any kind of partisanship, in addition to having bipartisan authors of the report, insisted very strongly that we have a bipartisan, and strongly bipartisan, meaning people who are very strong on either side, working group to advise us on the direction of our research. And we had a lengthy meeting with this group in May of 2006. And as I say, Thor Hearn was a member of that working group as requested by Joe Zarabrov. And the transcript is available now publicly. And you'll see that he really didn't raise any objections to anything that we were saying.
Thor Hearn did not?
Everything we were saying was pretty much what ended up in our draft report.
So Thor Hearn did not raise any objections when you guys were discussing this report?
That's right. He only later raised objections in the news media when the status report that became controversial came out in USA Today in October. But at the time, there was only one person on the working group who really had any serious concerns about anything we were doing, and that was Secretary of State Todd Rokita of Indiana.
Indiana, right.
The state with, you know, probably the most restrictive voter ID law, who I later found out not only emailed the EAC trying to object to my participation in this project, the participation of a Republican notwithstanding, but actually did not believe that the EAC had the statutory authority to even conduct the project, which is a little odd because it's actually required to do so under the Help America Vote Act that created the agency.
To create these reports. So Rokita, actually, what did he say to object to you?
Oh, I mean, you know, and he wasn't the only one. I mean, Hans von Spakovsky, who some of your listeners may have heard about, who was at the Department of Justice at the time in the voting section, who is now a recess appointee to the Federal Election Commission and is in the process of having his confirmation, his nomination confirmed now by the Senate.
Or not.
Also wrote
right.
a very lengthy email complaining about my being involved in this project, saying that I was obviously partisan and had written all sorts of things that, you know, were objectionable. And, you know, it was discredit to the EAC to have me working on this.
Okay, let me figure this out then. Since you mentioned Hans von Spakovsky, Tova Wang, and just to give the quickest of examples here, the original report that you guys submitted to the EAC said, and the EAC, by the way, is four presidential appointees, theoretically two from the Republicans, two from the Democrats, but the original report that you put in said there is widespread but not unanimous agreement that there is little polling place fraud. Now, when the final version came out of the report, after they had altered it, it said, there is a great deal of debate on the pervasiveness of fraud.
Right, yeah.
Completely changed the meaning.
That's a key graph that everyone's been picking up on for obvious reasons.
Okay, so if they weren't complaining about it, Tova, to you when you were keeping the EAC up to date on what was going on, if there was no real complaints other than, you know, Jason Torchinsky, he was the only guy from ACVR who disagreed, what happened between the time you put in this report thinking all was well? Did you not?
I did. I mean, I didn't know because they wouldn't talk to me about it. You know, there are emails now in the public domain that demonstrate that I was constantly, from August through December, trying to get in touch with all sorts of people at the EAC to try and find out A, what was going on with the report, because obviously, I mean, it was obvious to me that it was going to become a political problem for them more than anybody if they sat on it too long and didn't act on it, and B, what they were doing with it if they were actually working on it. And basically, they refused to work with me and refused to let me see anything that they were doing. I was sort of completely hamstrung.
I have argued, and I believe our reporting at bradblog.com has backed up this case, that the EAC itself is impossibly compromised at this point, certainly when it was being run by Paul DiGregorio, who was the chair while you were working on it, for the bulk of the time you were working on this report.
You know what, Brad, I actually want to disagree with that a little bit.
Sure.
I actually think we need an institution like the EAC. But the problem is the way they're being run right now. And I think that, you know, you and I have talked about this. I think, you know, I mean, I don't know what went on with this, and I don't know who was responsible for it. But I really believe we need an institution that can be a place where a clearinghouse for honest research, a place where states can get guidance on how they should best conduct their elections. We need an entity that does give out advice on how to improve our voting system. It's just not working the way they're doing it now. They need greater transparency. They can't be stifling the findings of reports that they hire experts together.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not saying the EAC as a concept is no good. I'm saying that this group has become compromised. They're secretive. They don't release information. And frankly, I've done a lot of reporting on them. Tova, they don't tell the truth.
Well, I mean, honestly, my biggest hope is that out of all of this will come an institution that is reformed and is stronger after all of this has gone on.
Well, how do you explain that they would not allow you to speak for so many months? How many months are we talking about now between the time you released the report and the time?
The whole time I was working on the report, too. So almost 2 years.
Well, fair enough, though. You're working on it. They want to keep it quiet until your report comes out. Once it comes out, what was the reason they gave you for shutting up for the past 6 months? They wouldn't let you speak about it.
Well, I mean, and they're right in a sense. I signed a contract that has a confidentiality provision in it that says that they own the research and I, you know, cannot speak about it. And, you know, perhaps I was naive in signing this contract. I never imagined in a million years that this would all go down the way it did. And immediately after they did release the report, I requested that I be able to speak about it. And I ended up actually very fortunately getting a pro bono attorney. Let me give a shout out to him, James Joseph from Arnold and Porter, who was instrumental in working with me and writing letters to the EAC and getting them finally to release the documents. And, of course, there was tremendous pressure coming from Congress as well to release all the documents regarding this and for them to let me speak out. Their position now basically is, well, we've released all these documents, so, you know, everything's out there so you can talk pretty much. But
But it took them, Tova, and you're much kinder than me. It took them how many months between the time they released their report, December 06, right?
Oh, right. Six months. And the, first of all, after our initial letter to them, they took 2 full months to even acknowledge that first letter requesting that I be ungagged, and then sent us back, like, a 1 or 2 paragraph letter, which apparently took them 2 months to write. So that was the first thing.
And I want to shout out to...
They came up with different reasons for why I couldn't speak. I mean, the final one was kind of funny because they said the reason that I had been prohibited from speaking is that I was a federal employee. And as a federal employee, I couldn't make public disclosures about the work, which is really funny because I don't remember getting anything but a 1099 form from them. And in fact, you know, they've acknowledged that. So to say I was a federal employee was just weird.
Weird indeed. Let's take a quick call here. Give us a call if you like, 888-5-PETER-B to speak with Tova Wang. John in Germantown, Wisconsin, welcome to the PBC show. Question for Tova?
Well, it sounds like she answered my question. I was going to ask if, when did you sign the non-disclosure agreement? Was after you agreed to work for him? And then did you realize its scope and nature? And it sounds like the answer to the second part is no.
At the time, you know, it seemed to me, and I guess I'm in a way a little bit embarrassed now because I went to law school. I've never practiced, but I am an attorney. I assumed that it was sort of a very normal kind of clause, and it really kind of was, that said that this is sort of a kind of work for hire where the research belonged to them. And I didn't have a problem with that. It never dawned on me that they would come out with something that I have, you know, be so troubled by that this would end up in this kind of a conflict. So, I mean, that's kind of the best answer I can give.
So you knew you were not going to be able to speak about the report once it came out, or did you presume that once the study came out, you would get to talk about it?
No, I knew I couldn't because we had had conversations during the report because, as I've mentioned, I'm someone who works on this issue as well as many other voting rights issues.
Right.
That's my job at the Century Foundation, and so I, you know, speak to the press a lot. And during the election in particular, I was being asked questions by, you know, any number of media, and I went to them saying, you know, can I talk about this? Can I talk to them? And they, you know, they told me I couldn't even before they put out their version of the report. So I knew that, and you know, like I said, I was able to get a terrific pro bono attorney, and that was very useful.
But it took
Congress stepped in.
It took months, and it was only really after Rosemary Rodriguez joined the EAC that she began to speak up and make some noise on your behalf as one of the new commissioners. And even then, the rest of the commission seems like they took months before they responded.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And, I, you know, again, I don't know what went on behind closed doors. I mean, I also have to acknowledge that, you know, a number of members of Congress also were quite upset about all of this. Zoe Lofgren and Maurice Hinchey and a number of others also were making demands of Senator Feinstein and Durbin on the Senate side. So they definitely were under a lot of pressure. And you know, fortunately now they've changed their position on it.
All right, we're going to be back with our few remaining minutes with Toba Andrea Wang speaking out for the first time about the voter fraud report that the EAC gamed. You're listening to Brad Friedman on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're back after this.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Every night, Jack Thomas camps out on a cold, lonely street corner. Tonight, some people almost brought him something to eat. Someone almost drove him to a shelter. Another almost brought him a warm blanket. And Jack Thomas, well, he almost made it through the night. Sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. But that's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. Visit don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
And let's take a look at traffic and tell you the latest, starting off with a problem. CHP was telling us about a situation working. It was on northbound 17 at the Cats, although it looks like everything pretty much cleared up, so that's some good news. Let's take a look at the King City northbound 101 before Canal Street. We have a bike in the roadway still being reported, although they've cleared that off, so that's good news. Salinas, Paul Avenue, Russell, right shoulder, two vehicles on CHP's on the scene. Santa Cruz, Empire Grade at Smith Grade, a two-vehicle crash being reported there. No further details. And a major injury crash being reported in southern Monterey County. This is an accident on Highway 41 south of Lucia. A motorcycle hit a parked car. The driver landed in a ditch. Paramedics, fire department on scene. They may be calling out for a medical helicopter to the scene as well. A support brought to you by Orkin Pest Control. A termite can lay as many as 38,000 eggs a day. Call Orkin.
Sorry, Tova, couldn't help it.
Oh, go ahead, everybody else does.
All right, everybody, Wang Chung tonight. Tova Andrea Wang is our guest here for the last few minutes of the Peter B. Collins Show. Democracy Fellow at the Century Foundation. Author of the Gamed Voter Fraud Report. It wasn't game when she turned it in, but by the time the EAC, U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, turned it out, it was gamed indeed. One of the other anomalies reported by the Times, the difference between her original report said there was evidence of some continued outright intimidation and suppression of voters by local officials, especially in American Indian communities. The final report, however, says that voter intimidation is also a topic of some debate because there is little agreement concerning what constitutes actionable voter intimidation. If they were going to make their own report, Tova Wang, why wouldn't they just write what they wanted to in the first place? And do you know who it was who changed the text of your report to what they eventually got here?
Well, to the first part of your question, I have very long now wondered if they were just going to write their own report, why they hired us and why they paid us, you know, using taxpayer dollars, honestly. Mm-hmm. My understanding from the emails that were released is that it seems that the primary person who was responsible for the drafting of the EAC's report was Julie Thompson Hodgkins, the general counsel at the EAC, who is a Republican, although she's not a political appointee, but she is a Republican.
Well, she was working, or somebody was working for somebody, because you turned this in and things were supposed to be fine. What did you think when you saw this report when it came out? What was your feeling when they finally released it this way?
Again, I'm probably, I actually had the feeling, obviously, that something mm-hmm. was going on when they refused to talk to me for 6 months.
Okay, but here's another example. Original report said false registration forms have not resulted in polling place fraud. Then their version of your report comes mm-hmm. out and says registration drives by non-governmental groups are a source of fraud.
That actually really annoyed me. I mean, I was pretty horrified back in December, and it's funny because it really took the U.S. attorneys scandal for people to start paying attention to what had gone on with the EAC, because at the time, you know, a few groups like People for the American Way and Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and you were onto this, it didn't get a lot of attention and I couldn't say anything, and so it was uncomfortable.
I can only imagine how frustrating. Let's sneak in a quick call here. Bob Bancroft, actually, from Voters Unite. You got a question for Tova Wang, and welcome to the PBC show, Bob.
Thank you, Brad, and thank you, Tova, for taking some time to talk to all of us about this. It's just so illuminating, and I think it's really appreciated.
Thank you.
My question was, do you know what the original genesis or impetus for the report was? Was this one of the things that HAVA tasked EAC to do, or was there?
Yeah, exactly. It's in the HAVA legislation that they're supposed to study this issue. But that brings me to another point, actually, which is what it says in HAVA is that the Election Assistance Commission is to study and do a report on voter fraud and voter intimidation. Well, before you even read the report that the EAC released in December, you could see that something was amiss because it was no longer called a report on voter fraud and voter intimidation.
That's right.
In fact, it was now called election crimes,
yep.
Which tremendously narrows greatly narrows the scope of what you're going to be looking at. It completely excludes the possibility of looking at acts that have the effect of being a fraud or intimidating or suppressing voters that either come under civil litigation or are not, as of now, part of the criminal code or not right now criminal acts under the criminal code, but maybe should be. Right off the bat, they had taken off the table things like challenges to minority voters, things like groups putting what appear to be armed guards in front of the polling places, deceptive practices, the phony flyers going out to people.
I think they knew that voter fraud in and of itself as a phrase had already become so discredited as a GOP scam that they decided to conflate them all into one big pot of election crimes.
Well, I think it actually allowed them to so narrow the scope of what they were going to look at
mm-hmm.
that they didn't have to deal with all these, you know, annoying little voter intimidation problems that currently, at least, are not being adequately dealt with by the law. They don't want to look at that. They want to look at things that are already under the criminal code. For example, in order to charge someone criminally for voter intimidation, there has to be some kind of physical or financial coercion. And it was my proposition that maybe we wanted to look at broadening the scope of that so that you could criminally prosecute people for doing other things that did not involve physical or economic coercion. But you can cut that out if that no longer, if you're only looking at what is currently under the criminal code.
Well, Tova Andrea Wang, thank you for joining us here. Actually, give me 15 seconds just on this is a scam as far as I'm concerned, as far as the Republicans go. Is this a scam to keep people from voting as far as you see across the GOP in general?
Well, I mean, you know, getting away from the report, because, again, I don't know. I don't have a smoking gun that tells me exactly what went on there. But looking at all of the evidence as a whole over the last several years and the pushing of the voter ID, I think it is quite evident just looking at the facts that they have been pushing this notion of polling place fraud and using it to enact stringent voter ID laws and others that would restrict third-party registrations and so on in order to exclude certain categories of voters. I think that's clear.
And just to be clear, those categories are Democrats. Okay.
They do tend to be.
Yes, they do. Tova Andrea Wang, thank you so much for speaking up, for joining us, for doing all you've been doing on this topic, and for the courage to fight back against these guys. I really appreciate it, Tova.
Thank you.
Tova Andrea Wang from the Century Foundation. You can read much more over there at the Century. Oh, we don't have the Century Foundation. TCF.org. Check out her work over there. We've got a lot. Search Brad Blog for Tova Wang. We've got a lot of thoughts, including guest blogs from Tova. All right, we've got to get out of here. We've got one more broadcast tomorrow. We will be back for that. Do I have time to thank everyone? To thank all my guests. Faz Shakir, Christina Johnson, Tracy Fleischman, Scott Dick, Tova Andrea Wang, John Gideon. I'm told we may have Greg Pallas tomorrow, Deborah Bowen, if we're lucky. A lot more. Katrina Rill, thank you for producing up at the Mothership, along with engineer Brian Urban, Desi Doyen here in the studio, Agent 99 for holding down fort at bradblog.com. Odie McClay and all the great folks here at KPFT for letting us ruin the joint.